Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yeah, everyone is requested to turn off their cell phone, mobile phone, whatever it's called. And also, if you would like to take photographs, please don't, at least during the talk. After the talk, take as many photos as you like. Not that we're trying to censor anything, just I get distracted, and probably others also do, by flashes in the middle of the program. The subject of this afternoon's talk is, or the title is, Women, Masters or Mothers, and I'll start by offering my obeisances to all my mothers and masters present, Matajis and Prabhus. Shri Narottam Das Thakur, at the end of his classic Prem Bhakti Chandrika, says, Na koriho keha rosh, na loyeho mor dosh, pranameha bhakate charan. He says, please don't be anyone be angry with me, don't accept any of my faults, don't be taken up by my faults. I offer my respect at the feet of all the Vaishnavas. This talk was originally meant to be given as part of the ongoing Bliss Festival. Bliss is an acronym. I can't remember what it stands for. It's something to do with a group of devotees in Vrindavan who want to promote Varnashram. Bhaktivedanta leadership in... Bhaktivedanta Leadership Learning Institute for Self-Sufficiency. It seems to be somewhat contrived. You have to you get a word and you try to fit something into it. But anyway, self-sufficiency, not specifically Varnashram, but self-sufficiency is a start that Srila Prabhupada suggested for establishing Varnashram Dharma, which I presume that the devotees who started this initiative did so by studying Srila Prabhupada's books and his instructions, wherein there are many, many such directives for the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement to establish Varnashram for the re-spiritualization of the whole of human society. The topic of women, masters or mothers, it's a topic within that broader topic. I was supposed to speak on that, but circumstantially I was asked not to do so. So I rescheduled this talk here outside the ISKCON premises. I also, as has now become quite well known, wrote a book with the title Women, Masters or Mothers. It's become quite controversial, so I'd like to address some points about the book and about the whole theme. For our better understanding. Controversial, yes, but Siddhanta Baliye Chitte Nakara Alosh Yeha Hoite Krishna Lage Sudhara Manosh. Srila Prabhupada, he specifically uses the word controversial in his translation of this verse, although it doesn't appear in the original Bengali. He says that do not neglect to try to understand proper conclusions, considering them controversial, for by such discussions one's mind becomes firmly attached to Krishna. Actually, the title of the book is, it covers a major section of the topics of the book, but the first part of the book is, for me, what is the most important part of the book, which is the whole direction of the Krishna consciousness movement. So whether women should assume the role of masters or mothers is not in and of itself the subject of the book, but it is that Varnashram Dharma should be established. It's a major project of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, or should be a major project that Srila Prabhupada stressed again and again, increasingly toward the end of his manifest presence in this world. He spoke about it practically from the beginning of his writings that we have. It's not something that he invented. Of course, it's given by Krishna himself, Chato Varnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Krishna himself gave this system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when it was proposed to him, the Varnashram system, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inquired from Ramananda Rai about sadhya sadhana tattva, the goal of life and how to attain it, the first proposition that Ramananda Rai gave was from Shastra, from Vishnu Purana, a verse that Srila Prabhupada quite often quoted, Varnashrama charavata purushena parapuman Vishnu raradhyate pantha nanyat tatto shakaranam. That one can achieve all success by acting within the Varnashram system. There is no, this is the way to satisfy Vishnu, there's no alternative to this. And Krishna himself says similarly in Bhagavad Gita, yata pravritti bhutanam sangsete yena saramidam tatam. How does it go? Swakarmana, that's it. Swakarmanatam abhyacha siddhim vindati manavaha. By acting within the Varnashram system according to his particular role and by worshipping Vishnu. Yeah, that's the point I didn't translate in the Vishnu Purana verse also. That by following the systems of four orders of social life and four orders of spiritual life and worshipping Vishnu, one can achieve all perfection. When Ramananda Rai proposed this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya, this is external. Of course, in the course of things that Ramananda Rai said, he also said, Sarvadhaman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also rejected that as external. So Srila Prabhupada explained this, that for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is fully on the he's fully on the spiritual platform, this is rejected. But for us, who are preaching on behalf of on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, it is necessary that we imbibe and inculcate this Varnashram. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all the acharyas, they uphold this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in writings of his, such as especially Chaitanya Shikshamrita, stresses the need to properly establish Varnashram. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made some moves in this regard of establishing Daiva Varnashram, spiritual Varnashram, as opposed to Asura Varnashram, which is based solely on birth. And of course, our own Srila Prabhupada, he, in his writings, he spoke so much about the need for this, and he famously said that 50% of his work was still to be done in establishing Varnashram, which if we consider what he did was unprecedented. Most amazing service to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said that 50% of his work isn't done because Varnashram is to tangibly bring about a revolution in human society by organizing people in such a way that they can live simply and happily and chant Hare Krishna and be in this way be free from the vices of Kali Yuga. So it's a great mandate given by Srila Prabhupada to his followers, which by not following it, we come to the platform or become in danger of Guru Ravagya. The third offense against the Holy Name is to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or simply to neglect the orders of the spiritual master. Unfortunately, our movement has, to a large extent, dropped this project. It's a difficult one, no doubt, and our early... By the way, all I'm saying now is a summary of topics which are written in the book and given in more detail and in a more systematic way. So our movement's early attempts to do that, to establish farms and self-sufficient communities, they largely didn't work out, and not only didn't they work out, but they, in some cases they worked rather badly. It became quietly dropped or relegated as we realized that it was a very difficult task to perform. I don't think there was at any point anyone sat down and said, let's drop Varnashram, let's not do it. But it gradually became relegated until last year, was it late last year, in the North American GBC meeting, an announcement came out on dandavats.com, a website that probably most of you are familiar with. It's the, you could say, the semi-official organ of the ISKCON leadership. An announcement came out that the North American leaders had decided to drop Varnashram, that we're not going to touch it, we don't know what it is, we don't know how to do it, let's just stick to what we're good at, which is preaching. And even prior to that, I know one of my godbrothers who's very active in trying to promote Varnashram had told me that he wanted to make a Varnashram ministry within the GBC, but that wasn't allowed, and one of the more influential GBC members had said that we don't want to use even this term Varnashram because we're afraid that people will misunderstand it as the caste system. So really Varnashram is semi-officially blocked, it seems. To that I would say, well, if people have misconceptions, well, preach about it, that it's not the caste system. The caste system is a misrepresentation of the original system. There are so many things which may not be popular that we have to preach. When I, in my youth, before I joined this movement, in England, where I was born this time round, the idea of reincarnation was somewhat known but considered to be largely crazy. Now it's not. Why is that? I would say to a large part that's because of ISKCON's preaching, Prabhupada's book distribution. Vegetarianism was considered something crazy. Now it's not. I would describe that again, in a large part, not solely, but in a large part to ISKCON's preaching and prasadam distribution. We have many things to preach. God is a person, and he specifically he's blue and looks after cows. It's not the easiest idea to promote, but we are enjoined to do so. We are enjoined to promote that modern science, modern education, the whole modern society is crazy, misguided, misleading, wrong, demoniac. These are all things we have to preach. They're not very popular, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't preach them. So, it came to a point. And another prominent GBC member. So I've heard through the grapevine. I don't have didn't have anyone with a recorder there, but I heard that one of our prominent GBC. When I say prominent, well, they're all equal theoretically, but some are definitely more active and influential than others. One of our prominent GBC members had said, "I don't even want to hear that V word," as if it's some kind of word that's, you shouldn't even say it. So this is the situation. This is the situation that had become, fortunately, having just about hit the bottom as far as Varnashram initiatives go, we've come up a bit from that. Recently, Shivaram Maharaj, who has been promoting and showcasing and Varnashram, beginning a project which is Varnashram, at least the beginnings of Varnashram in Hungary. He gave a presentation to the American GBC on, first of all, that Prabhupada wanted us to do Varnashram, which I thought was quite ironic or remarkable, that first of all the leaders of our movement in North America required to be educated that Prabhupada actually wanted this. And I believe that most of the devotees joining our movement nowadays, they don't have any idea about this, because no one ever tells them, no one talks about it, and they might get an idea by reading Prabhupada's books, and then they start things like bliss, but otherwise they're not going to hear about it. They're not going to know about it. The first thing is education is required in this regard, what Srila Prabhupada actually wanted as we move towards, as we come towards 50 years of Srila Prabhupada's founding of ISKCON. It's a good time to think again that what did Srila Prabhupada actually want to do, what did he want us to do, and how far are we fulfilling that? In some areas, the movement is going on quite well, but this is a major area. Remember that 50%, one major area which we have now it seems systematically dropped. So that's an emergency, because guru or avagya, to offend, if we offend the spiritual master or neglect his instructions, then yasya prasadad bhavat prasado yasya aprasada nagati katopi. If we are blessed by the spiritual master, if we get his mercy, then we get the mercy of Krishna. But whatever else we may do, if somehow or other we don't get the mercy of the spiritual master, then we blew it. We don't have any place to go, we have no standing, we're off course, we're not going to get Krishna's mercy. So this is a major point which our whole movement should consider. As I also wrote in the book, that man is a social animal, and Unless we're a yogi living in a cave, absolutely alone, which isn't recommended for us anyway. In this Kali Yuga, we recommend to be in the Sankirtan movement. Bahubhir Militva Yat Kirtanam Iti Sankirtanam. When many people come together and glorify Krishna in Kirtan, that is called Sankirtan, or group Kirtan, or Samyak, complete Kirtan. So if we don't set up our own societies based on our own principles, which are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc., then we will, by default, we will have to merge into or become part of the greater society in which we live. Economics, or the means of production of human necessities, production and distribution of human necessities, and in the not only necessities but luxuries, and in the modern age all kinds of gadgets and gizmos which people don't need. This is economics and society and the culture that develops is very much based on economics, and there are various kinds of economic theories and systems and ethical systems, but they're very much tied to economics, or a means of production. A modern society is the predominant role model for the whole world is the consumeristic society, which promotes lust, anger, and greed, which are the three gates to hell. Greed is required to run on the consumer society. People have to be induced to buy all kinds of things that they don't need and work to get money to buy things that they don't need. So there's greed, and to incite people to become greedy, to get more and more money and to get things that they don't need. Therefore, lust is used to promote everything. I'm not sure now, I don't live in the West, but when I was a kid, the sexiest adverts were for car tires, which are about the least sexy thing you could possibly imagine. But somehow or other, they managed to sell car tires by showing pictures of beautiful women with not many clothes on. So it promotes lust, and where there's lust and greed, there must be anger and violence, unnecessary violence, and these are the gates to hell. So if we have to partake in a society in which, among people in general, there may be some standard of what we call human decency or polite behavior, but the whole direction of the society is toward hell, it's not conducive for Krishna consciousness. And especially here in India at the present time, most of our devotees, there are many initiated devotees, and most of them have nothing like even the minimal amount of sadhana that Srila Prabhupada recommended for basic advancement in Krishna consciousness, because they don't have time. They have to work so long hours, and they have to commute to work, and they have to get their kids off to school, and so they have to earn enough money to send their kids at least a semi-decent school. Their whole focus and their attention and their life and their time is on making money, and they have to work with materialistic people on their terms, and they hardly have time for sadhana. So it's not... If we've understood that the goal of our life is to become fully Krishna conscious, then we want to do whatever we can to become fully Krishna conscious. And the minimal requirement is to have sadhana on a daily basis, which doesn't mean trying to chant your rounds while falling asleep on a bus going to work. Or you can do. I'm not here trying to minimize. In fact, I'm amazed at how determined so many devotees are in such adverse conditions to go on with their Krishna consciousness. But you don't have to live like that. It's not required. People think, well, we have to get money to get food, but this is an illusion, because food, it's not that you put money in a slot and food comes out. You put a seed in the ground and plants grow. And you don't have to have money. It's not actually required. Often people have difficulty understanding this. There's been quite a few books produced by a disciple of Bhakti Raghu Maharaj, Sahadev Das, Dr. Sahadev Das. He was given a PhD by an ex-chief minister of Andhra Pradesh, who was very impressed by his book on about oil. What's that called? Eden model of modern civilization. Peak oil, that's what I was looking for. So he related an anecdote from England. Those of you who live in the West, you're all familiar with the name Tesco. Tesco, soon it'll be in India too, most probably. It's a chain of groceries and supermarkets, and they sell food and pretty much everything else. You know, you were in England. So there's an anecdote that one woman in England, she had an allotment. That means you rent a little land from the local government or local municipality, and you grow vegetables and flowers and things like that. And most people get their vegetables from Tesco or some similar, Waitrose. In America it's 7-Eleven, Walmart, yeah. And you'll get perfect carrots, which are just exactly carrot-shaped, no squiggly carrots, and they're all completely clean and shiny. So this woman, she took her 5-year-old daughter to the allotment one time, and the girl's friend, who's also 5 years old, came along with the mother, and the mother dug some carrots out of the ground and held them up and said, "See, beautiful carrots." And the friend of her daughter, in disgust, seeing all the mud on the carrots, and they're not shiny, and they're not completely straight, says, "My mother gets carrots from Tesco." Which is a telling anecdote, which just shows how out of touch we are with even material reality, what to speak of spiritual reality. How out of touch we are. So actually I should get over to women masters or mothers. There's a lot to say about Varnashram. A lot. But I should... But the main point I wanted to make in that first part of the book is about the direction of Srila Prabhupada's movement. Man is a social animal, so if we don't create the Varnashram societies as Srila Prabhupada directed us to, beginning with self-sufficient farm communities, then we're going to have to partake of the broader society, and necessarily we're going to have to be influenced by it. And if it's going to be very difficult for us to preach what Prabhupada preached, that this whole society is totally misled, it's demoniac. Anyone heard that word? Did you read Prabhupada's book? Demoniac? We don't hear it much these days in our ISKCON society. It's a demoniac, misleading, foolish, royal edition of the animals. It's very difficult for us to preach like that if we're living as part, we're dependent on it. And if we don't set up an alternative, and so people say, "Well, you can say that, but you're living on our largesse. Whatever money you've got, you're taking from this. You're doing everything. You Hare Krishna people are doing everything, taking from this society. Therefore, you are just parasites." It's often said that religious people are just parasites. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to show that we live on the land we produce our own food, we show how to live as actual human beings have lived for centuries, depending on the land, Mother Earth, not some entity to be tortured, and depending on the mercy of God. Not everyone all over the world knows the word Krishna, but pretty much everyone who works the land, they understand that we are ultimately relying on higher powers. God, whatever word they may say. We're not in control here. So if we don't take up Srila Prabhupada's social initiative, then we're going to have to be part of the broader society, and largely our ISKCON society now is, instead of showing a positive alternative to the misled society, instead of showing people how you don't have to live this horrible life in the cities where you're pressured at every moment, where you have to be sick because the air you breathe, the water you drink, unless you pay for it, and then it's less poisonous than the water that you get out of your tap, which you also have to pay for. The food that you eat, everything is poisoning you. You don't have to live like this. You can come and live with us very simply and chant Hare Krishna and lead a pure life with simple living and high thinking. The modern society just degrades our thought processes so that people become infatuated by sex and fashions and sports and TV shows and all kinds of useless things which divert their attention from the real purpose of life. So simple living and high thinking. We should show this. If we don't show it, if we don't live it, then we have to become part of modern society, and to demonstrate our saintliness or to try to get the attention of others, we have to do things that misguided, misled people, or people without knowledge of the actual goal of life, consider to be saintly. And thus we start to try to imitate Mother Teresa or the Ramakrishna Mission or something like this in opening schools and hospitals and trying to help the poor, which, well, they're not the worst things you can do, but that is not the social initiative of the Hare Krishna movement. Our social initiative is teaching, first of all, teaching people what the goal of life is, and then making communities based on that understanding, how people can come together and live together and chant Hare Krishna together. As some of our devotees who are doing this now, they're having given up their city lives and their so-called good jobs. They're now living with devotees 24 hours a day. They have full morning and evening program. They have tilak. They're dressed as in typical Vaishnav dress. They're able to be devotees 24 hours a day. They don't have the so-called luxuries of city life. So this is the alternative that we're supposed to demonstrate, but if we don't do that, then necessarily we become sucked into the demoniac society and our whole... We lost ourselves, we lost our direction, we lost what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Now, a major manifestation of today's demoniac society is feminism, or the notion that men and women are equal in all respects. It's based on ignorance of Atmagyan, knowledge of the soul, that we, every living being is in different type of body according to our previous activities. We get different kinds of bodies, male and female, not only different bodies, but they have different function. In fact, you don't even need Atmagyan to understand that male and female bodies are different, and they have different functions. A major function of the female body is, surprise, surprise, to give birth to children. and with the physical apparatus given by Mother Nature or by God, or even if you're an atheist, you could say given by, I don't know what, it's not given by anything, it just happens. You just, some chemicals come together and they form in a different way to the chemicals that form male bodies. And ultimately it's by chance, although Richard Dawkins has some convoluted way of trying to say it's not chance. But anyway, there's no God in their equation. But anyway, whether you believe in God or not, still women give birth to children and men don't. You don't have to be an advanced spiritualist to understand this. In fact, all you have to do is be more than 3 or 4 years old, and most people understand that by that age, until they get feminist education. So the body is different, and the mentality is different also. The psychological need for women to have children and the psychology that nature gives to them so that they have a motherly attitude, a motherly desires. And with Atmagyan, with knowledge of the self, we understand that we are all trapped in this material world due to our illicit desires to be separate from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of whom we are all servants. This human form of life is very rare. It is especially meant for God realization, and especially the male form is suitable for self-realization, and the female form in human life is meant for giving birth to children, looking after children, especially, of course, the males also have a role to play in that, but primarily females, women, mothers, and they're meant also for service to males, which is not at all appreciated by feminists, who say that this narrative of women being inferior, socially inferior, spiritually equal, but socially they have a subordinate role to play. Feminists hate this. They say it's something which was invented to exploit the females, who are, after all, they have equal rights with the men to try to enjoy themselves as much as they can, because that's all they can see, as they don't have any higher goal of life than simply to live in this world and to try to enjoy it. So feminism is born out of a materialistic concept of life, that eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. And it's also a manifestation of impersonalism, in as much as it wants to negate real differences between males and females. Now, in this Women, Masters and Mothers book, I give the thesis that feminism has very much been influential within ISKCON also. Now, I'm almost certain that maybe one or two exceptions of those who I would call feminists within ISKCON would not subscribe to the narrative which I just spoke of materialistic feminists. They have a different narrative. Their narrative is that, well, we're all equal spiritually, so there should be no distinctions materially. We should all have equal opportunities. The materialists want to say that, well, we should all have equal opportunities for sense gratification. Of course, they don't use that word. Sense gratification is in-house ISKCON lingo. But to enjoy yourself, to make the most of yourself, be all that you can, to have the opportunity for career development, to use all your talents, and so on. Now, within ISKCON, we don't say that, because we have a different goal of life altogether, which is to satisfy Krishna. We're not gross materialists. But the narrative goes that we're all, ISKCON's on the spiritual platform, so there should be no distinction between male and female. And The counteraction to that is that, well, first of all, there's no such thing in Shastra that states such a thing, that men, that male and female, as they live in this world, should just be equal in all respects. We see there have been many great female devotees in history. In fact, the greatest devotee of all, the one who worships the best, her name is Radha because she worships the best. Of course, the material female role is very much a perverted reflection of Radha. But we see many devotees, Kunti, Draupadi, they played their roles as mothers, wives, and they were very great devotees. We can never hope to be, well, we should aspire to be servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of such great devotees as Draupadi and Kunti, for instance. So, men and women have equal opportunities to serve Krishna, but not necessarily doing the same services, because we have to execute devotional service within this material world, in which there are material considerations, and even if we are as perfect devotees as Draupadi and Kunti, we may follow a particular social order in order to set an example for others. In a more modern context, we find that Srila Prabhupada's sister was a great pure devotee. Some of you may remember seeing her. Some of you may have even served her. Some of the lady devotees, yeah, Pishima we called her, which means aunt. Bhavatarini was her initiated name. She was initiated also by Srila Bhaktis. She took Harinam from Srila Bhaktis Dan Saraswati Thakur. So she was a great devotee, and but she lived in her position as a wife and mother, even though, interestingly, her husband was a non-devotee and sinful in many ways, but she went on serving him. So the idea is that we're all equal spiritually, so we should all just forget all these material duty, and everyone can do everything. And also it's said that Srila Prabhupada, he treated his male and female disciples equally. There's truth in that, in as much as certainly Srila Prabhupada loved all his disciples equally. He didn't distinguish between male and female in the love that he gave them. And he did engage lady devotees in many of the services that he also engaged men in. Interestingly, he didn't appoint any women as GBC members or temple presidents. And throughout his books, we find, and his conversations and his letters, we find descriptions of the pristine Vedic system in which, well, men are men. Men act in a particular role which is expected of men, and women act in a specific role, a subordinate role, as mother, well, first of all wives and then mothers, not round the other way, as it sometimes is in modern life. Wives and mothers and sisters and daughters, daughters-in-law. Just that men are men and women are women. It's all very clear. In modern life, it's not often not very clear. You can't tell by their dress or their hairstyle or their appearance anyway whether someone's a male or a female. It can be... Srila Prabhupada also pointed this out. You can't tell. We also have all kinds of strange things which are due to the what's called political correctness. You're not even supposed to say such things, that men become women by some surgical operation and vice versa. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but whatever it is, it's demoniac. And if we were to say this publicly, we'd probably get in a lot of trouble. You might even be put in prison for it. It's quite possible. But actually, if we study through the eye of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, it's all quite demoniac. So, within our movement, there's this idea that, well, if we're to fit into the modern world, there's this very strong movement of gender equality. So if we don't go along with that, it'll make things very difficult for us. If we don't have women leaders, which is quite possibly true in America and Britain and Germany and places like that. But it's also true of so many different things. If our education system, our diet, the whole idea of setting up varnashram communities, our opposition to democracy. We're actually not supposed to be part of the modern demon crazy system. So if we don't go along with it, it may make things difficult for us, but because things are difficult doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. If we are to do what Srila Prabhupada wanted and change the face of the world so that people can live happily in Krishna consciousness, it's not going to happen just by having kirtan melas, which are a lot of fun, no doubt, for those who participate in them. But we're going to have to do some intellectual preaching, changing the way that people think and demonstrating a different way of life. And having women and men mix up together as equals is it's a factor which is going to spoil any other endeavors that we make to establish varnashram, because Srila Prabhupada said that the big idea between varnashram is to stop the sex to curtail the sex desire, which is increased when men and women mix freely, free mixing of the sexes, which is considered a hallmark of advanced modern society, the lack of which was a major justification for the US invasion of Afghanistan, to give them the human value of having men and women become equal. For that, they required to be bombed, etc. But we have we who are supposed to be the followers of Srila Prabhupada, who is an emissary of the Supreme Lord, come to spread Krishna consciousness and to give a whole lifestyle which is conducive for Krishna consciousness. We have a completely different outlook on life. Their idea, let us mix freely, and then everyone will be happy, and you can have sex here and there, and it doesn't matter, you know, everyone should be free to enjoy yourself, don't have sexual taboos, hang-ups. We learned that from Sigmund Freud, and then everyone can be happy. But the Vedic system is, in many ways, a more difficult way of life to follow, because there are many social restrictions. Freud said that these restrictions are causing you mental, psychological problems. But we say that lack of restriction causes you all kinds of problems. The main one of which is entanglement in repeated birth and death, forgetfulness of Krishna. So we require to have not gender egalitarianism or equality, but gender separation as far as possible to minimize the butter and fire effect. When butter is put in the proximity of fire, it melts. So when male and female are put together, their hearts melt. And then after that, there becomes a strong bond built on the heart. Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayoraho hridya grantimahu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahammameti. The basic principle of material existence, what binds us, is the knot on the heart that gets tied together by male and female becoming attracted to each other. From that develops attachment to home, family, country, wealth, society, and in this way we are bound up in an illusion of I, me, and mine. So this sex desire is the principle which binds us in this material world, and Varnashram is the social system that helps us to overcome that. Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna, associating with devotees, all these other these are direct spiritual processes, and for purifying the consciousness. And Varnashram is the social system which creates a favorable situation for that. In so many ways it creates a favorable situation. It enables us to chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, to live with devotees, whereas if you're working in some factory, office, shop, whatever, you in the kami world, you can't do that. Within our movement, there's this idea that women should be given the same opportunity as men to have positions. Men have made all the mess, so now women, they should also have their say and do all the things that men have not done. But that is not the social system given by Krishna. Or by Srila Prabhupada, and there are many disadvantages of that also, inasmuch as instead of encouraging spirit souls in female bodies, or women, to put it briefly, to play the role, we're all role-playing within this material world, which comes naturally with their physical and psychological makeup. That means to have children, to serve within the family, to love their husband, to serve their elderly parents, in-law, and so on. If we instead promote that the best women, the biggest women, the greatest women are all leaders and running around all over the world, giving classes and being just as good as the sannyasis and all this kind of thing, then it gives a different kind of role model for the young women to emulate. Srila Prabhupada engaged his female disciples in many ways. Some of them are the greatest book distributors in the history of ISKCON. They're all glorious, no doubt. Everyone who has come to Krishna's lotus feet is certainly glorious. And we should in no ways try to undermine or minimize the great contributions they've made to this Krishna consciousness movement. But at the same time, we can understand, I've analyzed this within the book, that Srila Prabhupada, he engaged his Western female disciples in many ways which were in line with the background that they came from. But he said that, well, the daughters of my disciples, they should be trained how to cook very nicely and how to be very chaste and faithful to their husband. He had a different plan for the future. He wanted them to be married early. All these ideas, they go against much of the modern feministic outlook, but Srila Prabhupada wasn't very impressed by that, to say the least. He was openly and controversially against the women's independence movement. There are some conversations. One female reporter challenged Srila Prabhupada, Do you say that women are inferior to men? And Prabhupada said, yes, of course, that's just natural. They are. Whether you agree with it or not, they must be. And there's a whole conversation like that, which became nationally famous all over America. And it wasn't very good publicity, you could say, because it went against what was politically correct. So, yeah, within our movement there's this idea that we should bring in equality, social equality. Men and women should do all the same thing, but I believe that this is strongly influenced by the mundane feministic movement, because where did it come from? It didn't come from Srila Prabhupada. So where is it coming from? The idea that we're all transcendental, as soon as we become devotees, we're all the same. Well, that's obviously not true. We don't all become completely transcendental. As soon as someone puts on tilak, they become transcendental. It doesn't happen. Srila Prabhupada wrote about establishing Varnashram even before he came to the West. But it was around 1974 that he really started to promote it more and more. And there's one very interesting recorded and transcribed conversation of Srila Prabhupada's here in Vrindavan, where Srila Prabhupada is saying how Varnashram must be established. And Srila Prabhupada's disciples who are present with him on that morning walk, particularly Satsarup Maharaj and Harishori Prabhu, they then argued with Srila Prabhupada, not in a challenging way, but for elucidation, that giving all the arguments that they had learned from Srila Prabhupada against Varnashram. That, well, devotees, we're transcendental, we don't need this. Prabhupada said, then if they're transcendental, why are they falling down? They can't even chant 16 rounds. Well, you're talking about being transcendental, but most of them have difficulty. Therefore, it is required to be introduced. Because not everyone comes to the transcendental position immediately, and most don't. And apart from that, we require to even if we are highly elevated and transcendental, we need to set an example for the broader society so that other people can learn how to live a simple, pure, natural life with God in the center, Krishna in the center. So Srila Prabhupada stressed the need for Varnashram among our devotees, and also for giving shape to a whole change in the whole world. Not that ISKCON is meant to be a few people. Of course, here in Vrindavan at Kartik, we have thousands of devotees coming, and we think our movement's becoming very successful. But realistically, if we take a neutral point of view, we're a very small movement. Who really cares? In the world today, the Hare Krishna movement is nothing significant. Of course, spiritually it is, but our devotees aren't asked to give guidance on how to run the society. We have a few thousand. We have some thousands of devotees here and there, but we have made practically zero impact in the way the whole world is going on. Well, I don't think it's really something to be praised. But at least we should think that we should be doing more. We should have done more for Srila Prabhupada. Now, there are many historical reasons behind that, no doubt beginning with the Zonal Acharya system and its ongoing manifestations. But we should really be doing a lot more. If we were living up to Srila Prabhupada's vision, Srila Prabhupada actually said that millions would join our farms. And especially in the Western countries, that would quite feasibly be a fact. If we had set up our farming communities demonstrating how people can live simply growing our own food, it would be immensely popular at the present time in America, for instance, where many, many people are aware that the government, the whole establishment, the government, the educational institutions, the mass media, the educational system, it's all it's all working together just to squeeze the people and exploit them. And you can't get fresh food, fresh water, fresh air. Even if you pay for it, you can't get fresh air. The whole society is simply, even without any spiritual understanding, the whole society is just set up to make life hellish for the citizens. So many people, if they were offered an alternative by which you can live simply, produce your own food, no, what to speak of producing your own food, there are so many people they can't even afford food. I'm not talking about India, I'm talking about America and England. And it's tough for them just, they can't, even if they live in their house, they can't, even if they own their own house, they can't afford to live in it because the taxes are so high for the tax, for the house that we already paid for. So the government is just, they're just squeezing people. So if we had this, then at the present time, no doubt, many people would be happy to join. And they may not all, they'd have to agree to follow some rules and regulations, but they, even in the beginning, they don't all have to be devotees as such. They can become gradually by association. So the direction of our movement should be, the social direction of our movement should be toward Varnashram. Feminism with the idea of men and women all the same, women should achieve, they should show themselves to be something big in the world. Why should they buy into the same illusion as the men are buying into? They have an easier path back to Godhead, actually, because that role of being a servant is very helpful. There's a story in the Puranas or somewhere of some rishis came to Vyasadeva. They wanted to ask him that which is the best yuga? And they thought Satya Yuga must be the answer. Which is the best gender? Male must be the answer. And which is the best varna? They thought Brahmana must be the answer. So they arrived at the ashram of Vyasadeva just as he was taking bath. Now, in the Vedic system, you take bath in the river or whatever, by holding your nose like this and dunking yourself under the water three times. One, two, three. So they came, and he just came up from first time. And he said, Kali Yuga. And he went down again and came up and said, women. And he went down again and came up again and said, Shudra. So the idea that Kali Yuga is the best. What is that verse? Kalo... No. Kalo sabhajyantyarya guna gya sarabhagina yatra sankirtananeva sarva swartho bilabhyate. That persons who actually know the essence of everything, they praise Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga, simply by sankirtan, you can get everything you need, material, spiritual, by sankirtan. So the women are the best. Then Vyasadeva came out and dried himself off and put on his tilak, I suppose, and explained all these things. And women are the best because men, they have so many things, rules, this, that, everything to follow. Women just have to serve their husband. That's all they have to do. And they get all benefits. All their dharma is fulfilled. And Shudra is the best because same thing. If they get a good master, they serve the master, then they get all benefits. So, Srila Prabhupada was also aware that it was difficult for his female disciples to accept all these things. There is a recorded statement of his in which he says that this Vedic culture is something very difficult for you Westerners, especially the women. So he did make some allowances, as is often quoted, that from one of Srila Prabhupada's purports in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 7, that we are engaging both boys and girls in preaching and book distribution, and the results are wonderful, because foolish people cannot understand that you cannot immediately change the customs of a people, so we're engaging them in this way. But on the other hand, there is much evidence that Srila Prabhupada did want to change the social customs, although he realized it's not possible to do so immediately. And therefore, he said, in the future, our children, the boys, they should go to Gurukul. The girls can be trained at home. There's no need for much education for girls or even for boys unless they're going to be brahmanas. So these are all highly revolutionary ideas coming from Srila Prabhupada, or we can say coming from Krishna Vedic culture. Srila Prabhupada recognized it was difficult for his female disciples to accept this, and it's still difficult. So some allowances will have to be made. I'm not advocating that we immediately try simply by diktat to enforce all these things, as for instance has been tried in various social revolutions, to just forcibly change the society by force, as happened with Lenin and Stalin in Russia and Pol Pot in Kampuchea, that everyone has to follow, otherwise you're dead. But our social revolution, it's not meant to go that way at all. It has to be by persuasion and by showing a better way. But at the same time, although we understand that feminism is more deeply entrenched in society than it was when Prabhupada was present, but at the same time, our social direction, feminism is very deeply entrenched, so we can't just expect to just change people overnight. Although it should be fairly easy to understand that men should act like men and women should act like women, and it doesn't just change the first time you pick up a bead bag and say Hare Krishna. It should be easy to understand. At least for me, I find it difficult to understand why people can't understand that women have bodies which are meant for giving birth, and they should, if they do act accordingly, they'll be happy at least on the material platform, and if they engage that in Krishna's service, they can become fully happy and fulfilled. And as much as they try to act otherwise, they'll always be frustrated. So allowances will have to be made for men and women who have been raised in a different society, and who, even though after coming to Srila Prabhupada's movement, they somehow have a filter when they read things like women are less intelligent, there's some kind of filter, and it doesn't register in their consciousness, or they don't read Prabhupada's books at all. It makes it easier to not read Prabhupada's books, because then you don't have to think about all these things which you don't want to think about. So that is a phenomenon which we see within our movement. More and more people are coming to the movement and they're not encouraged to read, or they're encouraged. First of all, you have to read someone else's books first, and then you get your filter put in place. So you read Srila Prabhupada's books through the filter of someone who's got his own take on reality, which is 99% the same as Prabhupada, but with some different emphasis. And certain things, even though some things are in the books, no one ever talks about them in classes or in any other time. So maybe subliminally, devotees think, well, these things, you don't really mean them, or no one talks about them, so they're not very important. But otherwise, our direction should be very clear as a movement, our social direction, which Srila Prabhupada gave us. It's easier to just capitulate and to go along with the flow and go and get some medal given to you or some prize given to you by some government officer for being the greatest this welfare society or whatever. We're not going to get many awards for going and living on the land without electricity and producing our own food. And we find that even within our ISKCON society, when we try to promote this, many devotees, or anyway, we call them devotees, but they preach against it. They say, no, you shouldn't do that. You have to think of your future, and it'll be bad preaching, people will think, well, you're dropouts and you're parasites and you're failures and so on. So it is difficult to establish all these principles, but it starts at least with understanding where we're going. This may sound like quite a rambunctious speech. Probably the reason for that is because it is quite rambunctious. But please read the book, and everything's given point by point. I can understand there are objections to that, and I offer obeisances to all the devotees who disagree with me. I don't know them all personally. It seems they're mostly all lady devotees, and most of them have had a long life of service to Krishna, and have served Srila Prabhupada's mission in so many ways. But again, we have to consider the direction of our movement. What is the social direction? If we don't fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mandate, his order to establish Varnashram, then it's something like Srila Prabhupada faulted his godbrothers for not taking up their Guru Maharaj's order to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. They did preach. It wasn't that they didn't preach, but they didn't do so all over the world, and Srila Prabhupada faulted them for that. So if we fail to take up the next stage, which is establishing Varnashram, in which clear gender roles have to be defined, and they're not the same gender roles that are desired or inculcated by modern pseudo-egalitarian society. If we don't do that, then we're going to be guilty of not fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's order in this regard. We may do many other things, but if we neglect this major area, then whatever else we may do, we can't say that we've fully satisfied Srila Prabhupada, or even that we've taken his orders fully very seriously. We may say, well, let's put it off till later, but then that's like people who's, you tell them, why don't you chant Hare Krishna, I'll do it later. And they go on their whole life like that. So we can go on generation after generation and say, well, we'll leave it for later. And it goes on and on and on. And then no one, we can do it now. We're told to do it now. We should do it now. Leaving it till later is a cop-out. We have Prabhupada's order to do it now. Now, there were some objections to this book being sold here. And the sale of this book was banned at ISKCON Vrindavan. This talk, which I was supposed to give at the Goshala on ISKCON Vrindavan premises, was banned along with the sale of the book. And I thought to call this meeting so that those who, by whose objections the sale of the book was banned, so that they could give their objections and I could speak about those objections. I asked the objection if the objections could be sent in an email. I didn't get any. So where does that leave us? There's so much objection to the book that is banned, but if we ask, well, why? Why exactly? And silence. Well, we just want to talk about Krishna. Well, you could go on talking about Krishna. You didn't have to ban the book. So some of the objections that I had forwarded to me that did get put out in the cyberspace in this latest storm in a teapot within our, so there's always some controversy going on. I could understand that those who are making the objections had not read the book, because many of the possible objections are addressed within the book itself, beginning at the beginning with why should devotees bother with social issues? Why don't we just chant Hare Krishna? And why should a sannyasi be writing a book about women? So in regard to this, I wrote in the very beginning of the book, which made it clear to me that those who had made the objection hadn't read the book, that social issues are widely dealt with in Shastra, and even subjects regarding women are described. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Narad Muni describing the roles of women. There are many statements in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Paramahamsa Sanghita, about women. Srila Prabhupada himself spoke about this a lot. Narada, he's a famous brahmachari. He gives so many instructions. And in other shastras, such as Garuda Purana, there are extensive sections which are actually quite graphic and which I wouldn't quote in the book because they are very graphic, describing certain things about women. So sannyasis are supposed to be the guides for, in the Varnashram system, they're supposed to be guides for all of human society, particularly in spiritual matters, but because in this world the spiritual and the material overlap, therefore sannyasis are supposed to give guidance, as Srila Prabhupada did on many of these topics. Why not just talk about Krishna? Well, I gave a whole lecture about this, actually. If you get the book, there's 150 lectures in there on these topics. Why not just talk about Krishna? Well, why didn't Srila Prabhupada just talk about Krishna? At some point, you're going to have to put some food in your mouth, and the food has to come from somewhere, and someone has to produce that, and there are so many material needs we have. We're living in society, and we want to give others the opportunity to talk about Krishna also. Therefore, we require a social setup. Therefore, we have to understand how to do it in a manner that will be conducive for people to be Krishna conscious. And it's a very big subject. Therefore, a lot of discussion is required about this. Actually, a lot of discussion is required. Some devotees, under my guidance, mostly my disciples, have made some good steps in setting up Varnashram communities, but a lot of talk goes into it. But what are we going to do? Each step. What do we do? A lot of talk, a lot of thinking has to go into, a lot of discussion. So we do, and we have ongoing discussions about what should we do in this regard, in that regard, all different things like ownership of the land should it be in a trust? Should it be in private ownership? At least at this stage, we don't want it in the name of ISKCON because we're afraid that the leadership, not being at all tuned into this, could just take it over and turn it into something else. Apart from that, well, this is getting a bit off the subject, but I don't think that Prabhupada envisaged ISKCON to be an international, multinational corporation which owns millions of properties all over the world and everyone has to have their life micromanaged by some impersonal entity that they don't know, and as multinational corporations work. There should be individual householders also doing their own little farms and chanting Hare Krishna and schools and businesses and whatever. So but anyway, the point is a lot of talk is required. We need to discuss these points, and it's so many things we have to discuss. Applying the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra in the circumstances that we find, there are all kinds of things coming up. For instance, Srila Prabhupada moved the Gurukul from Dallas in USA to Vrindavan because he thought here people will appreciate and we can have our own school on our own terms. But now in India there's RTE, the Right to Education Act, which is very dangerous for those of us who want to establish actual Gurukuls with Srila Prabhupada's books as the basis of the curriculum, because this law, it's already there, but it's not yet being, it's gradually being implemented, won't allow us to do it, the same as in America. So there are things, we have to think about these things and discuss them and How do we want to be close to the city so we can go and preach and people come and visit us, or we want to be away from them so they don't disturb us so much? So many considerations. Find there's so many things we have to think about. So we do have to talk about this. And yeah, it's all in Krishna's service. When Krishna and Arjuna were fighting on the battlefield, Arjuna was thinking of his weapons and looking at the enemy. He was thinking of Krishna, but he wasn't talking about Krishna's dancing in the Rasa Lila. He was fully absorbed in fighting for Krishna, which Krishna told him to do. And Arjuna said, well, I just want to go away and think of Krishna. And Krishna said, well, I am Krishna, and I'm telling you, stand up, pick up your bow and arrows, and let's go. So, the idea, we'll just think of Krishna. Yes, mama nusmara, that's right. But, oh, Arjuna said, yeah, that's right, mama, that's what I want to do. Yudhyacha, you have to fight also. So we have to act in this world. There's also an objection that I have 150 lectures about women, which on a CD or DVD, actually, if they're not all...
Hare Krishna.
They're not all about women. They're about varnashram and related topics. Why is a sannyasi talking? We don't hear about Krishna. Well, I have about 5,000 hours of recorded lectures, and there are 150 of them which are on varnashram topic and related topics. So, thank you for your concern for me, but it's not that I talk about women day and night. Although, as in one of my lectures I pointed out, the title is that Brahmachari should always think of women. The perfection of Brahmacharya is to meditate on the gopis of Vrindavan, but that's another topic. So, I heard one of my god sisters say, well, I'm very concerned about him. He's my god brother. Thank you for your concern. I suggest that as you're so concerned about a godbrother who's so absorbed in thoughts of women, that you might also extend your concern to at least one of my godbrothers who has a permanent female companion who he travels with around the world. Now, that's not the kind of thing you're supposed to say openly, but these kinds of things are going on. It caused me a lot of concern, because how on earth are we going to establish varnashram and sannyas if we have such a farce going on in the name of sannyas? That's something I'm concerned about. But it's not the sort of thing you're supposed to talk about, because we're all being nice and thinking about Krishna. Another topic came up. Why did I write about menstruation? I knew at the time I was writing this, someone's going to shoot me down for doing this. But the fact is, surprisingly or not surprisingly, I'm quite often asked about this. That what should women do during that time of the month? Because in Indian culture, and I'm mostly in India, and as I write in the beginning of the book, this book will be better appreciated and more germane to devotees living in India, although Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish this culture all over the world. So it's something I'm often asked about, because in Indian culture, not only in Indian culture, but in many traditional cultures all over the world, during this period, it's called a period in English, women are impure, ritually impure. That means that just like if a man has dysentery, he can't worship deities or function properly, or because impure objects or impure substances are continually emanating from his body. So a man with dysentery can't do puja and shouldn't try to cook for the deities or any such thing. So that's a standard thing in Indian culture. It used to be that women of the higher classes, they would be sequestered during their period. They wouldn't see anyone, they wouldn't speak to anyone. gradually, with the change of society, the girls, they go to school, and then they keep on going, and then they go to the office, and there's no difference between that time of the month and any other time of the month. But still, the culture is widely upheld in India that they don't go to temples. So you see, I get asked about this. Well, should they go to the temples or not? Because Srila Prabhupada didn't institute this in the West. Does this mean that he didn't want it instituted in the West? I understand that Srila Prabhupada wanted this Vedic culture to be brought all over the world, in which that would be one of the things to be introduced. Just like you don't go on the altar to worship the deities if you have dysentery. So you don't go on the altar, or you don't go to the temple. So anyway, it's explained there, and because I'm often asked about this, so I thought, okay, let it be put in the book, and then I can just tell them, look in the book, you'll get the answer there. I thought I'd get flack for doing it, but anyway. You get flack for so many things. It's part of life. As I said to once when I met one of my godbrothers who, like myself, is known to be on and off the subject of or involved in various controversies. He at that time was in the midst of one of them, as I am in the midst of one at the present time. I mentioned something to him about it, and he said that, well, if you're not making waves, then you're not probably doing your job properly as a sannyasi. Which I also understand is one reason why sannyasis aren't supposed to stay more than 3 days in one place, because they come and they speak the truth. For instance, Pungsastriya Mithani Bhavamitam, what's that other one? Maitani Bhav. What's that one? Yan Maitun Adi Griha Medi Sukham Hi Tucham. Kandu yanena kariyori vadukha dukkham, tripyanti neha kripana bahudukha bhajam, tripyanti neha kripana bahudukha bhajam. What's the last line? Kandutivan vishaya, vishahetate, kandutivan something vishahetate. Manasijam, oh that's a very important word, manasijam vishahetadhira. So they come and say that, yes, well, actually, family life is based on the happiness of sex, which is very insignificant, and it's the pleasure, it's like the pleasure you get when there's an itch and you scratch it. But an intelligent person doesn't scratch. He tolerates, knowing that this pleasure is manasijam, it's crazy. So, sannyas, they stay 3 days in one place, and the grihasthas serve them, and 3 days is as much as they can take, because it's too intense for them. But they should hear it. They should hear it, so that some point in time, it clicks, and then they go off and take sannyas themselves. At some point in time, they're not supposed to do so. But you have to hear this. It's much easier just, well, don't say all these things and just smile and be nice, but that's more grihastha dharma. Smile and be nice and adjust to everyone else. But brahmanas and especially sannyasis are meant for speaking truths, even though they may not be very much liked. I'm told that the cover is particularly provocative. There's a picture there, is there? There's a picture of... This picture somehow got equated with... I won't mention the name, but some American female politician. But the idea is, it's to show a stark contrast. There's the traditional role of women as mothers, and then if we take the other role to the extreme, we have women as aggressors, as soldiers, as killers, and that is the other extreme. Now, as I say in the beginning of the book, I'm not saying that any women within our movement are, they don't partake in the extremes of the karmic feminist movement, but that is the bhav or some feeling that we should take control of our own lives and show ourselves. We are powerful. In fact, at one ISKCON center in Canada, where I was at, there was a leaflet being given, a pamphlet, soliciting donations for Food for Life Vrindavan. And the title was, I Am Powerful, with a picture of a young girl. And it was all about how we're empowering young girls, which is absolutely not what Srila Prabhupada had the idea. This idea is absolutely coming from Karmi society, empowering girls. And the idea, I am powerful, this is Hiranyakashipu's philosophy. It's also Krishna's philosophy concerning himself. But for a jiva to say, I am powerful, is Ishvaroham aham bhogi, Siddhoham balavan sukhi. It's the demoniac mentality. So, the cover, it said it's very provocative. Yeah, well, it's provocative is not necessarily a bad thing. If we're jeev jago, gora chanda bole, koto nidra jao maya pishachira kole. If we're sleeping on the witch of the lap of maya, we need to get woken up. So, if in our movement we're going in a wrong direction, or we've imbibed some wrong ideas from the Karmi society, then you can say, Haribo, Prabhu. We can be very humble and polite, but sometimes some provocation is required. If being humble and polite generally means to be ignored, so sometimes some provocation is needed. I'm saying all these things now. It's not anything I'm saying that is new. I've been for quite a few years myself, and many others have been saying in various ways that we need to seriously think about the direction of our movement. There are concerns that we're not fully going in the right direction. So, hence this book is focusing on one aspect of that. The main aspect is the social direction, and plus this whole thing, because there are so many misconceptions, which our devotees join, and they think, Brahmachari training program run by a woman, for instance, woman 30 years old in one center in America. It's good they have a Brahmachari training program, because there are not many centers in America which even have Brahmacharis, but they're run by a woman, and no one thinks, I don't think that's right, actually. No one thinks, it's just normal. So something seriously wrong there. All right, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, you can please ask. If you like, you can clap, it's not Vedic. Vedic is to say sadhu, sadhu. But I have all the people here saying sadhu, sadhu. I don't have the objectors. Where are the objectors? Anyone have any objections? It's easy to preach to the choir, as they say. Yes, please. Yes, please. What's your name, Maharaj, please?
Used to be Prabhupada.
Yeah, I know.
Bhakti Prabhupada.
Okay. Damodar Swami. Hare Krishna.
There's so much discussed. I'm hoping that if you're still in Vrindavan for some days, you may have the privilege of getting your darshan. And we can discuss personally something, if it's possible. Otherwise, maybe by email. The thing is, one thing I'd like to do very briefly is, I read about 40% of the book in sequence. I got a Kindle version of it. And one thing that I found very inspiring, and it's almost conclusive just in itself, is one exchange that you mentioned between Srila Prabhupada, and as is rightly said, perhaps the female devotee who is most beloved by Srila Prabhupada of all the devotees was Yamuna Devi. Mm-hmm. So undoubtedly it's a very, very powerful and powerful in the proper sense. And very gifted devotee. There's no doubt about it. And Prabhupada appreciated very, very, very much. Emotionally, even appreciated. So, that exchange will be very brief, but I think you back me up that it's worth repeating. That this misconception that ladies, that they're spiritual, there's no, who's more spiritual than Yamuna Devi? But yet, even in the case of Yamuna Devi, she was sitting close to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada approved of that to hear Prabhupada's lectures. But at one point, Sannyasa went up to her, if I'm getting the story right, I think I am, and he said, Mataji, did you notice where all the other ladies are sitting? She said, yes, I do. The etiquette is that you should sit not right next to Prabhupada, but you should sit with the ladies in the back. And so she did that. Because she's a great soul. She didn't say, no. She did it. She accepted it. And then Srila Prabhupada, he asked Yamuna Devi, Mataji, you don't like to hear my lecture? And she was almost in tears. And she's saying, I like it more than anything in the world. I love to hear your lecture. And then Prabhupada said, and why are you not sitting where you would normally sit? No, up to that point, it sounds like, of the feminist orientation. Sorry. So, what happened next is very, very telling and very, very crucially indicative of Prabhupada's real mood. She told her, Prabhupada asked, why don't you sit where you normally sit? Yamuna Mataji, she said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I was sitting and a sannyas came up to me and told me it's not the proper etiquette, I should sit in the back of the ladies. Prabhupada was silent for a moment or two. Correct me if I'm not getting it exactly right, but this is exactly what I'm remembering. And he said, yes, that is it. That, just those words that Prabhupada, like, yes, and even his most beloved, so transcendental devotees, Yamuna, and then also that other point where he wanted Yamuna and the Govinda Dasi to become GBC, the two of them together to count as one vote in the GBC body. And Yamuna said, it won't work because I have a female body, it just won't work. And Prabhupada agreed to that. So, this was very inspiring in the sense that it felt so solid and everything was putting forth. Just these exchanges, and there are others as well, these are so indicative of Prabhupada's real mood involved. And who can argue against it unless they don't read it or they don't think about it?
Yeah.
The question I have, I'll be very really.
I just insert that one thing I didn't say is that this book is based on literally hundreds of quotes from Srila Prabhupada, from his books and conversations and letters.
Right, thank you. I'll just say, very brief, the question that I have is, in the spirit of we can take good advice, even from a filthy place, I have no objection to a very Marxist outlook that you described, that the economic infrastructure
determines the that's a Marxist outlook, yeah.
It is a Marxist outlook, and you may have gotten that right. And you seem to agree with that. Now, I'm not criticizing you, because I also agree with you.
They're very much interlinked. Culture, worldview, economics, ethics, they're all very much interlinked.
The means of production, obviously with the Industrial Revolution, the immense impact it had socially, there's no question. My question isn't why did you mention Karl Marx? That's not where this is going. I have no problem.
Oh, I do in the book, actually.
Yeah, but you didn't mention Marx, but you did not give this idea that I just mentioned. Marx,
yeah.
And that's not a problem. My question is, assuming that it is true, we just need to accept that it is true, how much the social mores, social interactions are affected by the economic substructure? Then the question arises, are we putting the cart before the horse? Is it realistic to expect that we can really fundamentally reform and re-establish the proper relationship between men and women and the proper etiquette before the economic base is put in? Just trying to be consistent with your
Yeah. That's a very, very important point. That traditionalist societies, which are agrarian-based, not that everyone is engaged in agriculture, but which are agrarian-based, they naturally lend themselves toward more traditional gender roles. And in a absolutely non-traditional society as we have today, which is based on urban living, consumerization, production and use of all kinds of things which previously were unimaginable, such as electrical amplification and illumination, for instance. How much can we expect to change the gender roles as long as we're living in this society? I believe I mention it in the book. Maybe I don't. Definitely in my lectures, many times I have said that, well, as much as individuals do so, even within the modern urban society, that much they will personally benefit from it. Although, of course, they are at great risk because, for instance, you might marry a husband and he might just run off or mistreat you because he's also not trained in the right culture, or vice versa. A man may have an idea to have a good wife and she may not have the same, she may disappoint him in that regard. Of course, our social aim is not to establish proper gender roles, but our social aim is to establish Varnashram, which Srila Prabhupada wanted to start that by simple living on the land. So, and as long as we don't do that, it's going to be all the other things that go along with that, such as proper gender roles, cow protection, establishment of Brahminical culture. What to speak of having kings? That's really there are many difficult points to discuss, because we can't break the laws of the land while we're establishing these communities. But at the same time, many of them we don't want to follow. So, if the whole thing of establishing Varnashram, this comes along with it. That will naturally be established. Proper gender roles, plus cow protection, and so many other things. Proper education system. But at the same time, we very much have to understand the need for that. If we don't understand the need for that, then even if we set up farm communities and this and that, then it'll be much easier to come to these gender roles if we understand why we have to have them and why we're so messed up by not understanding it.
Yeah, I would say that although it is more difficult to establish the proper generals in the absence of a proper economic base, at the same time, I was going to use the same term, messed up. We can't even clean straight how to establish finance from boundaries as long as it seems to be getting worse. And the generals are so confused and kind of bent out of shape, so to speak. This unfortunately, economic base or no economic base, there is certainly, we are really struggling to get things decent in that area. Otherwise, even to establish China Trump, we become disoriented. And I'm not just talking about we become grossly sexually agitated. It's not that. It's just a whole way of thinking becomes.
Yeah. I plan to speak a bit more about that tomorrow afternoon at the Bliss Festival. We do have one pilot Van Ashram project in Gujarat, which is going on fairly well. The devotees have moved from the cities and they're growing their own food and we have a Gurukul and devotees are happy. Practicing Krishna consciousness is by no means self-sufficient yet, but it's going in the right direction, and we invite devotees to visit that to get some idea, because it's easier to get some idea by seeing it.
Thanks for giving us a wonderful opportunity. Actually, Vrindavan is place for qualification of Radharani and qualification of Vaishnavas.
Vrindavan is the place for glorification of Radharani and glorification of Vaishnavas. It's also a place where Srila Prabhupada regularly spoke on topics of Bhagavad Gita and of establishing Varnashram. This is the Vrindavan I know from Srila Prabhupada.
So, I
read
the whole book. For a few days, I was seeing your disciples. I found to be encouraging, but my thought of the book is that it has to be going in more into seminars, maybe open debate, not accepting that. Maybe more people.
Yeah. More things can be done. You're welcome to take the initiative further.
Thank you for encouragement.
It's a bit oxymoronic, isn't it? A lady with a gun.
Maybe we can put the Mahishasura Mardini, something like an issue, more logical.
Yeah, I'm thinking of another addition. But one thing is that Durga Devi is worshipable for that. This young lady is not. I should also take this opportunity to thank my disciples for helping in distributing this book and under much pressure, which must be very difficult for them when senior devotees come and start telling you that your guru is off and this and that, and this book is off and you're off and everything. You need to be informed how bad your guru is and all this. It must be very difficult for you, so thank you.
If you allow me, I have a small request, because this is the year of my dear friend Mahaprabhu, I wish that Buddha would have not been. The conversation between the Mahaprabhu and the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I got the heart on volume of Chaitanya as a gift to you. So that you can do something more deeper into the conversation of Ramana Karaya, which is very dear to our Krishna.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the book and for this suggestion. There are many things to be done in writing and in preaching Krishna consciousness. There are already many devotees working on the Radha Bhav level. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna. I'm more in the basement level. control the mind and senses, understand we're not the body. There are many up there, but I'm down here, and there are many also who are down here who also need some basic orientation before they can go up there. So I'll preach you're not the body, and we have to control the mind and senses, and then when people are ready, they can come to you and you can teach them all about Radha Bhav.
This is a gift on behalf of all the Vaishnavas from Kirtan Gopinath.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. This is from Radharani Parsada.
Hare Krishna.
And some gifts from Jagannath Puri.
Hare Krishna.
And some more gifts, this is from Tirupati Balaji.
One thing, when we go to the Varnashram communities, you have all your, you would have everything there. You don't go on the train here and there. You don't have extra money to go here and there. So if you want to do all your parikramas to Tirupati and do that and then come and join our firms.
Thank you. This is from Tirupati Balaji to multiply your surplus Lakshmi.
Oh, we don't have surplus Lakshmi. We don't have any. We use it all for Krishna.
To get gold.
Yeah, yeah. To go on pilgrimage means you walk. Nata Gauranga, he's here. He's heading up that Varna. He's come here to preach about it. So he has a, he has the another excuse. Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah, but you say he's Gauriya Math, but actually in the Gauriya Math branches and sub-branches,
yes,
they only have sannyasis. That means he's independent of the Gauriya Math, if he's a Grihastha Guru.
He
was a pujari there. I know him.
He
was a pujari there. So it.
There is also service in Iskcon. So once when you got to the Jagannath Mahaprabhu, who is in UK currently, he and myself, we went to that devotee. And he was sharing something which I'd like to share with you.
His mother had many disciples, to make a long story short. Is that what you're coming to?
She was a disciple of
Yeah, but like I say, she wasn't following the Gauriya Math structure. She did so independently. Because within the Gauriya Math, all the sannyasis, they have a mat. All the gurus are sannyasis attached to a mat, and there's one sannyasi with every mat institution. So she may have done, but she wasn't following any particular mat or organization in doing so.
He said there are many philosophies that
He said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appointed many gurus. Well, women gurus, yeah. Well, in my knowledge, and quite possibly I have more knowledge than he and probably most other people in the world about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't appoint any gurus specifically. And among his followers, also they in the official Gauriya Math branches, they also don't. So individuals they may have done, but it wasn't coming from him. I don't accept that unless he can give some evidence. What's the evidence? No one ever taught. I traveled and met so many disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I never saw or heard of any who knew anything about women gurus. So he may say, but I think I claim to know more than he does. having met so many and done so much research. So she may have done, but it wasn't within the under the aegis of any Gauriya Math branch. And that's also discussed in the book about female Diksha Gurus. It's not wholly against the principles of Vaishnavism, but I don't think it's what we need at the present time.
I would like to understand one sentence. That if a woman is a pure devotee, she has got darshan of the Lord.
You read the book, it's all discussed in the book. She can become a guru, yes, but as Prabhupada said, in exceptional cases. We find historically Kunti, Draupadi, they didn't become official gurus, that is women. There are examples, this is all written in the book. In our sampradaya, there's Janava Mata, Ganga Mata, Goswamini, Hemlata, Thakurani, who acted as Diksha gurus. They were exceptional, Prabhupada said, very few in exceptional cases. In exceptional cases. But my contention is at the present time, first we should. Prabhupada spoke hundreds of times about establishing Varnashram and about establishing women's roles. We're not talking about that, and we're talking about something that Prabhupada hardly spoke about at all, which is about making women as gurus. Why don't we get the Varnashram thing right first of all, and then we can think of exceptions. Whereas now if we do it, it'll seem more like affirmative action in line with modern feminism, that women should have the same role as all the rights as men. So that's why I'm not in favor of having female Diksha Gurus at the present time. Okay, we hired this hall up till 6 o'clock, but it's India, they won't throw us out yet. Well, they already asked one question without permission, so you can. Where are you? The sound comes from
here.
You have to put your hand up. Yeah. You are here, but the sound comes from one direction. So. Okay. Women were abused, children were abused, everyone was abused, pretty much. There are a few devotees in our movement who didn't get mistreated at some time or other. At the same time, we got the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna. How are we going to stop abuse? How to introduce protection? Women should be protected in their childhood by their fathers, during most of their life by their husbands, and in the old age by their grown-up sons. That's the system. Therefore, it's a challenge to establish Varnashram. So much education is required, but because it's difficult to establish and because we have so far not done very well in establishing it, doesn't mean that we should throw it out altogether.
I'm not against it.
Thank you. We appreciate your support.
What are you doing for that?
What are we doing? Come to the seminar tomorrow morning with Natha Gauranga. He'll tell you what we're doing about it. What we're practically doing. One thing I'm doing is writing books. That's one thing. That's a beginning, isn't it? Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your appreciation. Well, I'm not the only one. Yeah, please, there's a hand up there.
Thank you so much, Lord. Thank you so much. such a great in India, because the Maitreya Shiva to a better extent. And then it started talking about the realization of the economy started. So Vatashram Dharma actually is based on the global economy and global economy. But now we see that even our society as a whole is a global society, and global economics has become a globalized economy. So this is a great threat for establishing international system. Prabhu always emphasized on international system. But I just wanted to know if Prabhupada has ever given a guideline of how the international system should be and how the details of
Srila Prabhupada has not given details. He has given many details. The first thing is that we should live on the land and produce our own food. He also said that it's very difficult to establish the Varnashram system as it was previously, but it can be done by spreading the Sankirtan movement. So the two things go together. Prabhupada has given many, many guidelines, actually. It's not that Prabhupada hasn't given many of the details. How to actually implement them is a great challenge, no doubt. That's a fact.
So whenever we talk about implementing the Varnashram system, the major objection comes about the success rate of establishing such systems and then sustaining.
Yeah, again, it's that it's difficult, but that doesn't mean we give up. We should go on with faith that what Prabhupada said must work. If we take his blessings and his guidance, then it can and should be done. The fact that it's difficult doesn't mean that we should give it up. It should be done. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.